Hello, I'm John Wilson. Thank you for downloading this edition of Master Tapes from BBC Radio 4. Welcome to Master Tapes and to Robbie Williams singing live for our audience here at the BBC Maidervale Studios. In the first part of this edition, Robbie will be talking and playing his way back to the making of Life Through a Lens, his 1997 debut album, which set him on the course to become the most successful British male solo artist of all time. It included the tracks Oh Before I Die, Let Me Entertain You, and of course, Angels. Welcome, Robbie Williams, to Master Tapes and to Maidervale. Have you been here much before? Have you done much work here?
Yeah, I've been here loads of times through the years. Funnily enough, I lived a few streets away from here whilst recording the album that we're about to talk about.
You were living in Maidervale when?
Yeah, in a basement flat. It was my first flat. And it was 97, yeah.
So you were writing this album. This album came about very close to where we're sitting at the moment.
Yeah.
And I think this edition of Master Tapes will, more than any other that we've done, serve as a reminder that no matter how many records you sell, how many Brit Awards you win, however famous you are, and you are pretty famous, the songs...
Tremendously famous,
yeah. But the songs all start in the same place for any songwriter, in a quiet place, in a hotel bedroom, an empty studio, maybe... at a desk. Is there any one set way for you when you're writing songs that you have to get yourself into a particular mindset?
I started off doing poetry back in Take That Land, and Gaz was the primary songwriter and lead singer, etc., etc. And I wanted to do a bit.
So were you constrained then by the format? I mean, that was part of the tension within Take That, that Gary Barlow was the chief songwriter. Did you feel that, look, I've got all these songs to give and offer and they just weren't getting aired?
I wrote this song about a prostitute, the first one I wrote.
For Take That?
For Take That, yeah.
And you wonder why Gary said no.
Absolutely. That's exactly what happened. I was like, Gaz, I've got this tune, I've just written it, and it's about this prostitute in Manchester, and I sang it to him, and he went, that'd be all right for a rock group, wouldn't it, lad? I was like, oh, yeah, crushed. What I wanted to do didn't fit the mode or the band that I was in at the time.
Yeah, and the title of this album that we're talking about tonight, Life Through a Lens, it is a very evocative title because even though it's your first solo record, you had made several records and you had been living your life very much through the lens for several years. I mean, with Take That, the massive hits, the screaming fans, was there a sense as soon as you left of freedom?
No, but I was highly delusional. You know, I thought I was going to be Robbie Williams. I thought I was going to go on and do what I've done. And looking back now, with the tools that I had, it's the equivalent of stretching an elastic band to the moon. You know, I moved down to London and I had this big court case with BMG, who I was signed to at the time. They had this members leaving clause in the contract. If the members of the band leave, then we sign Gary Barlow for 750 grand. And Jason Orange, Howard Donald, Mark Owen and Robbie Williams for 75 grand.
You all had prices on your head.
We all had prices on our head, but ours was a lot less than Gary's. And for reasons that I can't go into, because certain people like suing me and they like winning, there was a big need for me to get out of my contract and out of that record company. Mm. I think I made $1.1 million or something in Take That, and then it cost me $1.5 million to get out of the deal. So as a 20-year-old, I ended up coming out of Take That owing 500 grand. So,
but hang on, just to set something straight, because clearly there had been some build-up before that. Did you walk or were you sacked?
It's a bit of both. At the time, I was drinking really heavily. And very young, you know, 19 or 20, I can't remember.
And already very famous.
And very famous. And I was rehearsing with the boys up in Manchester. And I'd finish rehearsals and then I'd go and get tucked into some vodka. And a lot of the times, most evening, I'd end up sort of crying myself to sleep. It was a bad time. I think I must have been having a breakdown of some sort. I'd said to the boys, you know, this will be my last tour. And we went for a curry the night before everything happened, and we were taking a competition winner for a curry. It mustn't have been a very nice evening for them. And I went back to the Midland Hotel, I got drunk again, I got up the next day, went into rehearsals, I wasn't in a very good way. And then during the afternoon, Jason Orange said, Bob, we need to sit you down and have a chat. And I was like, oh, okay. So you're going to leave after this tour, and what we've decided is we think it's best that you go now so we can prove that we can do this as a four-piece. What do you think? And that was the opening of the door. That's all I needed.
What did you
to
say?
Go. Well, I actually grabbed a pineapple and said, can I take this?
And they said, take that.
Take that. And they laughed. And then I said, this is it. I'm going, you know. I'm not coming back. And they watched me as I walked out the door. And
with a pineapple tucked under your arm.
Pineapple tucked under my arm.
Yeah. The first single that you put out as a solo artist was the cover of the George Michael song, Freedom. So, again, very symbolic.
Well, what happened was J.F. Sicilian, bless him, signed me to EMI, big French guy with big French kahunas. And it was for a load of dough. And I lived the life of somebody that had already had an album out, you know, and I was sort of famous for being famous and going out. And JF was like, come on, investment, payback time. And it was like,
pressure's on.
Well, do this cover version of George Michael's Freedom. And it bought me a bit of time. There's no way on earth I would have done it.
So you didn't have any other songs ready at that moment?
No, but, you know, I was dossing about.
Yeah.
You know, I was in pubs, I was in clubs, I was, you know, I'm a working class boy from Stoke-on-Trent. And then all of a sudden I was mixing with all sorts of media types in Soho. Living large, but actually not doing anything to support myself.
But what got you writing was hooking up with Guy Chambers. And he was the producer, the writer, that you'd never worked with before.
The record company had run out of patience with me. And they sent me a list of people. I'd say about 30 people on the list. And I went, that's him.
Why did you know it was him? Why did you identify that name? There was no.
I don't know. But I can remember I was in my mother's living room. And I can remember looking at this piece of paper. And I went, that's who I need to go to. And I turned up at his flat, and that day we wrote Angels.
And it's the beginning of a very long, famous partnership, and you wrote the first five albums together, and that partnership is about to be renewed again right now. Ladies and gentlemen, Guy Chambers. Guy, that's the This Is Your Life moment of this edition of Master Tapes.
Loving it.
Well, what's your memory of first meeting Robbie, and why did you want to work with him?
I mean, he was in a bit of a mess.
Did you worry? Did you think, what have I got myself into here?
Yeah, the first thing he sang at me was, I think you were talking about the prostitute song. I mean, that's South of the Border, isn't it?
Oh, no.
Oh, it's not that.
No, there's a theme developing though, isn't there?
So you already had South of the Border, one of the tracks on Life Through a Lens.
And the first line, it says, you know, I know an old lady called Cocaine Katie. I think that was on the first line you sang at me.
Which I stole from Dr. Hook.
Really?
Yeah. An old freaky old lady named Cocaine Katie.
Is that what
she embroiders on my jeans.
Rob, have you not had enough trouble with lawyers in your career?
I can't believe it.
If you're fessing up to nicking stuff from Dr. Hook at this stage.
I'm sorry, Mr. Hook. I'm a magpie.
Guy, does he bring the lyric to you and say, come up with a tune for this?
What he did was, I'll show you how it went.
Yeah.
He started singing it. Go on, sing it.
I know a freaky young lady named a Cocaine Katie.
So you can sing it like this. Yeah.
Keep going. She makes my temperature freeze.
Well, I just picked up a guitar and
she
went.
She gets a blood red powder when she gives a shout. She'll bring you to your knees. Well, we were being clever, playing God games forever. She said she only meant to tease. But I'm someone's brother, got a father and a mother. You know I'm gonna have to leave South of the Border.
And that's how we wrote it. I just joined in.
You just literally joined in. And that's the way the partnership worked very often through the years then, did it? Rob's throwing lyrics at you. You're kind of keying into the key that he's singing in.
Yeah.
And then following on.
Yeah, trying to keep up.
Yeah. We wrote the album in 8 days, basically.
Where were you?
We were at Guy's flat.
And in Stoke.
And in Stoke.
We wrote a bit in Stoke, didn't we? Remember we
did
went
we?
Up there.
I can't remember.
This is an album that includes the tracks Angels and Let Me Entertain You. I mean, two of your best-known songs. But it finishes, in fact, with a hidden track. And it's a track which you only find if you let what looks like the last track on the CD run for about another 10 minutes. And then there's a spoken word poem. It's poetry as revenge, in a way. And it's a piece called Hello, Sir.
Yeah, I was in Take That. And there was something that needed to come out of me. So I'd sort of write poetry. And this poem was the first one that I wrote that I went, I can do this. I think I might have wrote it on the tour bus, because I wrote it in the back and then Lulu was at the front of the tour bus. And I was like, Lulu, check this out. And I said, do you want me to do it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Hello, sir, remember me. I'm the man you thought I'd never be. I'm the boy who you reduced to tears. I'm the lad called Thingy for 6 whole years. Yeah, that's right. My name's Bob, the one who landed the pop star's job. The one who you told, Luke, don't touch. The kid who wouldn't amount to much. Well, I'm here and you're still there with your fake sports car and receding hair. Dodgy Farrah trousers that you think are smart. Married to the woman that teaches art. Married to the life, married to the school. I want to sing and dance, sir. Now who's the fool? Sing and dance. You thought I was balmy. Settle down, Thingy. Join the army. And who are you to tell me this? The dream I want, I'll have to miss. Sir is God. He's been given the right to structure lives overnight. Now I know life's true path. Tanks and guns, that'll be a laugh. Nah, not me. I'm a mega civilian. I won't lead my life riding pillion. But thanks for the advice, and I'm sure it'll do for the negative just like you. As for now, I've a different weapon. Stage and screen is about to beckon. And here I sit in first class. Bollocks, sir. Kiss my ass. Thank you.
But I put you on the spot with that. You don't have the lyrics in front of you, and that's really important. So that is a song that's hardwired in.
It's hardwired. You know, it is the blueprint to the rest of my life and to the rest of the lyrics that I wrote.
But what's lovely is the attention to detail in there, the Farrah slacks and the fact he's married to the art teacher and all of those little details which are very telling. And throughout the album, there are a lot of character studies. But there's one song in the album called Killing Me, which seems to come from a different place.
You know, I was 20 and I was incredibly depressed. When you get spit out the other end of the industry, you don't know who or what you are.
It was a big come down.
And during that come down, I happened to write a song about it, and it was called Killing Me.
Would you like to perform it now?
Yes, please. But funnily enough, this morning I was walking my baby girl round the block and I went past the flat that I used to live in. I was like, I used to live there, baby. And I say, it's my job to not let you end up in the state that I was in there. And I sort of got some closure about my time in Maida Vale in that moment this morning.
For contractual reasons, we're unable to include complete songs in our downloads. But if you'd like to hear the full version of this and other songs recorded during the sessions, head to the Master Tapes pages at the Radio 4 website. Robbie Williams, Guy Chambers on piano, Gary Nuttall on guitar, and the Robbie Williams String Quartet.
And Maida Vale
and
audience
Maida
on percussion.
Vale joining in with hand claps. In a version of Killing Me from the 1997 album Life Through a Lens. And it strikes me, Robbie, listening to that song, how many of these songs are, and it's obvious in a way, you've just come out of such a kind of tumultuous time of your life that you are writing so directly about that. But you've always done that. You are such an autobiographical songwriter, aren't you?
I heard a long time ago, write about what you know. And I know very little. I left school without any GCSEs.
What, you failed them or you just didn't take them?
No, I failed them all. Yeah, I failed them all. So I don't know anything other than my feelings.
And Guy Chambers, what do you remember about the way that that song came about?
I just remember him being very low, because obviously he was quite big then, you know, considerably bigger than he is now. And part
you're talking about weight.
You're talking about weight now.
You're talking about body size, rather.
Yeah,
than
and I was
I'm a huge pop star now, guy.
But weight was a big thing for you back then, wasn't it? I mean, you weren't sure that you could be a pop star. I remember you having a lot of discussions that I don't know if I can get through this. The making of the album was pretty tricky because often we would be waiting in the studio and he'd be too drunk to make it.
Which reminds me of a story.
Yeah.
So I'm in Maida Vale. And
in the flat.
Yeah. And Elton John kindly agreed to have a listen to how far I got with the album. I knew him from being in Take That and he come to see us and he's a great guy, a wonderful man. And I left the Maida Vale flat in a black cab and I stopped in every pub along the way to the studio and had half a pint of Guinness. I went in there and fell asleep under the mixing desk. I was supposed to be recording a vocal for, can you remember which?
It could have been Angels. We were often trying to get him to sing Angels. That went on for
there
weeks.
There was two tunes that I needed to do a vocal for and I was going to rehab the week later.
So the clock was ticking.
So I pick up a cassette tape. I go round to Elton John's house. I'm wasted. And I walk through the door and I go, save my mouth. And he looks at me and sort of puts his hand in his mouth and he goes, you've got to go to rehab now. And I was like, yeah, I've got to go to the rehab now. So they convinced me and I got in the back of the Citroen and I can picture Elton with his hand in his mouth waving me goodbye. And I'm like, where the hell am I going? And I got taken to this detox centre and they booked me in and went upstairs. It was just me on the ward. And I sat on the bed and it had that plastic stuff just in case you pee yourself. And I thought, oh, no, this is the rock bottom that they talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
I opened the curtains and there was a window and then a brick wall. And I was like, oh, no. And then I turned the television on and England were playing Poland on Channel 5. And it was at that time when a few TVs couldn't get Channel 5. And they'd given me this liquid kosh to sort of knock me out and turn me into a vegetable. And even in my vegetative state, I knew I had to watch England versus Poland and I knew I had to break out of this joint to go and get Channel 5 somewhere. And they wouldn't let me go and they were furious with me. And off I went.
Right.
And anyway, I managed to do the two vocals. The album came out on time and here I am in Maida Vale.
The two best-known songs on the album are, I guess, two of your best loved in your entire career, and they have such relevance because the live shows now, you open the shows with Let Me Entertain You, you close the shows very often with Angels and leave them weeping in the aisles. And let's look at those songs, because Let Me Entertain You has become, it's a calling card in a way, it's a mission statement, isn't it?
We were watching the Rock and Roll Circus.
The Rolling Stones Rock and Roll Circus.
Yeah, the Rolling Stones Rock and Roll Circus, and we went from Guy's living room, having watched that, into the studio, and in the vein of that film, we wrote Let Me Entertain You.
Well, it has got a Who-like aspect to it, Guy,
yeah,
hasn't it?
I mean, it's kind of a cross between the Who and the Stones, Sympathy for the Devil, because Sympathy for the Devil is down, I bet myself I'm a man
of wealth and taste. Been around for a long, long year.
Oh, many a man,
and then let me tell you. It's a similar thing. The chords are different, though.
Yeah, we can't get sued for it.
Yeah. And lyrically, Robbie, it's a song in many ways that says, you know, I am showbiz. But is it an address to the audience, or is it, again, a lyric addressing yourself? Is it a note to self, in a way?
Hal is gone and heaven's here. There's nothing left for you to fear. Shake your ass, come over here. Now scream. What the hell does that mean?
But that's a great couplet, though, isn't it? I'm a burning effigy of everything I used to be.
You're my rock of empathy.
My dear.
My dear.
And then you change, my dear, and it becomes, and either your French is very bad, or this is a song which is addressed to a man, mon cher. So is that
no,
too...
That's, you said mon cher.
Did I?
I remember that bit. You used to say mon cher. They're right there. Mon cher.
Ah.
And it was, funnily enough, I had four or five singles before Angels came out, which was the hit that, you know, gave me the career. And I was about to be dropped. There was a memo that had gone round the record company, and it's understandable. You know, they made a big investment, and it was sinking.
Because people forget. They think of this as a hit album, your first solo album, but it took a long while.
Yeah, it took a while. But what happened was they wanted me to do Let Me Entertain You, and I was too scared to do it just in case people went, no. That literally was my thought.
That people would say, no, we don't want you to entertain
thanks.
Us.
You know, I couldn't take the rejection of people going, no.
But the burning effigy, I mean, that's quite appropriate now when you look back at it. You may not know what you were writing about, but I'm a burning effigy of everything I used to
be. I didn't even know what those words meant. I'll be honest with you. I didn't know what an effigy was, what empathy was. I just know they were words and they rhymed.
This is probably true, because I remember you saying at the time, these words are just total bollocks. But but I would go, yeah, it's okay. There's plenty of total bollocks in rock and roll.
Yeah.
And Angels is a different tone altogether.
Yeah, that's not bollocks.
And that's one which is regarded by many people as the song that you will always be judged by, that you will always be associated with. I mean, looking back on it now, how do you judge it?
Without it, I wouldn't have my career. I wouldn't be fortunate enough to live the lifestyle that I live and experienced everything that I've experienced. The best albatross anybody's ever had. I'm never sick of singing it. I'm never sick of hearing people sing it back. I watch stadiums full of people thinking about people that have passed on while singing it and tears streaming down their faces. And every night it's incredibly difficult to not get emotional, even though I've done it a thousand times.
So you had to be almost kind of strong-armed into the studio to sing that, because you were sort of in and out of rehab. You didn't have the confidence to sing it, because you knew
I was just, I was drunk.
It's as simple as that.
It's as simple.
You were too simple. You're too drunk.
I was too simple.
You were too simple and to sing Angels.
And unreliable. You know, it's just unreliable, loose cannon.
But, Guy, when you finally got into the studio, you put him behind the microphone.
In a straitjacket.
I mean, was it apparent straight away? Do you know in those moments when you're in the studio and the whole thing is being put down onto tape, that's the one?
I think I knew that when we wrote it. I'd been waiting so long to write something important.
I mean, the chorus is yours, Guy, then, is it?
I think maybe the melody, you know. Right.
That's not how I remember it.
Call the lawyers.
I remember you went ching and I went, and through it all!
But what about the imagery? You know, does an angel sit and contemplate my fate? And
it was a song that was inspired by a poem of my sister's. And I wrote the lyrics for it in her back garden in Newcastle-under-Lyme with a bottle of vodka with my mother and my sister there. I mean, I'm even a magpie from my own family. In her poem, it said, "And as the feeling grows, she breathes flesh to my bones."
You're having that.
I'm just about to write that. That's brilliant. And so there it was. The verses were done. And at the time, the chorus was, "I'm loving angels instead. I'm loving angels." This was the chorus of the thing. "I'm loving angels and angels and angels. Whoa, angels instead." And we seem to have conflicting memories about what happened next.
But the rest was history.
Yeah.
And set you on the path. And you're going to play us out with a special live version of Angels, accompanied by Guy Chambers on piano and Gary Nussel on guitar and the string quartet here at Maida Vale. There'll be more music in the B-side of this programme when our studio audience asks the questions and we hear about Robbie's latest album. You can hear that tomorrow afternoon at 3:30 here on Radio 4. But for now, my thanks to Guy Chambers and Robbie Williams.
Does an angel contemplate my fate?
Remember, you can find the full version of this and other songs recorded during our live sessions on the Master Tapes pages at the Radio 4 website, along with photographs, videos, and the other editions of the series.
I've been told that salvation